Are we all here? We ready? I love that video because it captures what I think all of us, we resonate with that. Now, hopefully it doesn't look exactly like that. Obviously, we're exaggerating to make a point, but man, there is some reality to that as being the world that we live in. Of just, we have these things, these little glowing rectangles that are all consuming in our world today. And so we as dads have a tremendous opportunity, really, to shepherd our family within this day and age. And so that's what we're going to talk about today. And I want to just start off by saying I am here not by any stretch of the imagination as an expert, but as a fellow journeyer with you. Let me introduce my family to you. This screen makes my family look huge, by the way. But there they are. So this is my wife, Brandy. She and I have been married for 21 years, and then we have four amazing kiddos. So Josiah there on your far left is my 15-year-old, my 13-year-old daughter standing next to me there in the middle, Selah, and then Malachi is my 10-year-old, and then Ella is my 8-year-old. And so we are on this journey right now with you guys. And I'm in the teenage realm of I have kids who do have phones, and then I'm in the realm of kids who wish they had phones because all their friends have phones, and they're all connected, and they all have Instagram, or they all have whatever, and we're kind of those parents that are going, oh, hey, what we really want to do in this space is just be thoughtful. And not just to kind of go with the flow. And so as you come into the room this morning, here's what my assumption is that there's a spectrum as it relates to technology where I think all of us live with somewhere within this spectrum. And there's two opposite extremes of this spectrum that I don't think are healthy and appropriate for us. One end of the spectrum is just that of fear, quite honestly. That as we're looking at the world around us, maybe we're reading articles, we're seeing what the latest report is about Snapchat or Instagram, or there's a Facebook hack or something like that, that we just kind of live in fear over here, and we just go, oh my gosh, nobody has ever had it as bad as we have as parents. Nobody's faced the challenges that we faced as parents, and this is awful, and so we're kind of living in fear over here. And then on the other end of that spectrum is what I would just call apathy, that we really are just kind of go with the flow. Hey, whatever just happens, your friend got a phone. I guess it's about time for us to get a phone. That's just what you do now. Or, hey, those kids are on social media. I guess it's time for my kids to be on social media. And we just kind of go with the flow of the culture and we're apathetic. And so I think those are the extremes of the spectrum. And hopefully we are all kind of somewhere in the middle. But I think we have a tendency, all of us, within our own hearts to lean one direction or the other. And yet, as followers of Christ, as men who are shepherding our families towards faithfulness, we want to figure out, man, what is that healthy balance and how should we think about technology in our families today? What is the place that it should take? Last night, I was helping my daughters clean up their room. And it's just amazing to me that I walk into the room. We have these two perfectly good dressers, where, I don't know, you put clothes. And so I walk into their room, and there are mounds of clothes stacked on top of the dresser. Because, that's what you should do with clothes. And so I'm like, hey, why are these on top of the dresser? Well, I'm going to wear them. I'm like, for the next 2 weeks? Like, what's going to happen here? Because they're everywhere. And so I was like, hey, these clothes go in the drawer. Because perhaps, like us, you have a rule that says something along the lines, or some axiom that says something along the lines of a place for everything and everything in its place. And so we go, hey, look, shirts go in this drawer, socks go in this drawer, pants go in this drawer, and we put those things away, not on top of the dresser. Well, technology is one of those things that, much like clothes or toys or whatever around our house, it has a place in our family. We can't escape it. We can't run away from it. It does have a place in our family. But the question, as we'll talk about today, is what is that place? And have we put technology in its proper place, or has technology overrun us in such a way that we're just kind of, again, going with the flow, and it is all consuming for us as dads, first and foremost, perhaps for our spouses, and then certainly for our kiddos? So I know some of you are in the room and you're like, man, my kids are not even thinking about phones other than mine and wanting to borrow it to play whatever, you know, game. And then others of us are in that stage where our kids maybe are asking for phones or have just given them to them. And so I know we're kind of all along the spectrum. And so what I hope to do today is just to give us an idea to either prepare us for that day when it's coming or to help us today as we're trying to navigate this world. And so here's the main point that I want to make today is that I don't believe that we have a technology problem. I don't think we have a technology problem as it relates to our families. I do believe that we have a purpose problem, meaning that I don't think that we are thoughtful and purposeful about what is the goal for us as dads within our own homes. What is it that we're aiming at in the time that we spend together as a family? And what is it that we should be aiming at? And so what I hope that we're going to do today is to give us some things that no matter how technology is going to change, because it is going to change. It's funny, I went back and I listened to, I gave this talk back in May, and it's funny how just since May until today, how many things have changed, right? New apps, new games, the latest trend, the latest scare, whatever it might be, but those things have changed. And so how do we root ourselves in things that are unchangeable so that when things change around us, we're not thrown for a loop? That's what I want us to do today. And so I want to start off just by giving us a definition of family and helping us to go, okay, what is it that I'm supposed to do as a dad? How am I supposed to lead? And so this is a working definition that I've been using for myself and just as I lead the family ministry at Watermark. It's just this. Family is a divine institution established and designed by God for the purpose of forming people to represent God's wisdom, character, and creativity in the world, and then pass it on from generation to generation. And so we'll leave that up there for you guys if you want to copy that down or write it down. But I want to break it down a little bit for us because each part of that definition is really important for us as we think about the purpose. And it will help us to figure out how do I put technology then in its place if this is the purpose of the family. So the first thing is just it is a divine institution established and designed by God. You guys, we all should understand that this whole family thing was not our idea, right? This was God's idea from the beginning. We see it in Genesis 1, 26 through 31, which says, God said, look, let us make man in our image. So nobody was around going, hey, God, I've got an idea. And in fact, in Genesis 2, as we see later, it's interesting that it wasn't Adam who came to God and said, hey, God, I just named all the animals and I figured out there's not one for me. That's not how it happened. No, it says that God recognized that Adam was alone and he knew that it was not good for man to be alone. See, Adam didn't even know that it wasn't good, but God did. And so God established and designed the family for a purpose, okay? So what is the purpose? Well, again, back to Genesis 1, we see that the purpose was for us to be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth and to bear his image. And so we are God's representatives in this world. We are his vice regents in this world. We are stewards that he has left. I love one of my favorite characters in the Lord of the Rings movies, which I'll geek out on that if you want me to, but is the steward of Gondor. And the steward was one that was left by the king to take care of the kingdom until the king should return. And that's who we are. We're not the king. We are stewards of the kingdom. And God has left that for us. And so God has established this. And then he has left us here to represent three aspects of who he is. First of all, is just his wisdom. His wisdom in this world. Deuteronomy 6 is this passage that we use all the time as we're talking about, man, what does it look like for me to be a parent? And it is the great command of the scriptures. Jesus said, what is the greatest commandment? He went straight back to Deuteronomy 6, says the greatest commandment is to love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and then to love your neighbor as yourself. Deuteronomy 6 goes on and he says, look, these words that are on your heart, you need to teach them to your children. This wisdom of God, to love God with everything you've got and let it change every aspect of you is to be on your heart and then you pass it on and teach it diligently to your children. And then later on in Deuteronomy chapter 30, we see God talking to the Israelites and he's saying, look, I have set before you today life and death, so choose life. And so wisdom is us going, hey, I know that there are ways that lead to death. I know that there are ways that lead to life. And as a wise person under the wisdom of God, I want to lead myself and now lead my family in wisdom. And so we're to represent God's wisdom in this world. The second thing is we are to represent God's character in this world. We are image bearers. And Psalm 78, I love this passage, and especially its admonition to us as parents. In verse 5, it says, "He established a testimony in Jacob and appointed a law in Israel, which he commanded our fathers to teach to their children, that the next generation might know them, the children yet unborn, and arise and tell them to their children, so that they should set their hope in God and not forget the works of God, but keep his commandments, and that they should not be like their fathers, a stubborn and rebellious generation, a generation whose heart was not steadfast and whose spirit was not faithful to God." You see, we have been, God has been constantly on display in this world. He has made himself known to us, and these glorious deeds of God, his character, is on display for us and for our children. And so what if our purpose within our family is to go, man, I am about establishing and building my own character as a follower of Christ, and then about helping my kids to develop character that is representative of the God that they say that they love? What if that was the purpose of the family? What place then would technology have? And then the third thing we see is the creativity of God, that God is creator. Tolkien actually talked about the fact that we are actually sub-creators, that there is something that gives us life when we do things that bring newness or when we create something with our hands, or when we do something at work that we just go, man, it feels good. It feels fulfilling. Why is that? It was because we were created in the image of God. We were created to be creators in this sense. And so we see this in 2 Corinthians 5 because the gospel has bearing on this, in 2 Corinthians 5 rather, where we're told, hey, you are a new creation in Christ. And then it's saying, hey, as a new creation, now go be God's ambassador to reconcile the world back to God. And so this is us being creative in the world, in the way that we share the gospel, in the way that we put it on display in our world. And so we want to be people who are raising our kids to represent God's wisdom, his character, and creativity. So that is what the family is for. And I would just argue this morning that if we can get that right, if we can focus our minds on that, again, no matter what happens with technology and how it changes or how it infiltrates our home, if we are focused on that, we'll know where to put technology, what place it should have within our family, and how it can help us to accomplish those things. But if we live in fear, or if we live in apathy, then technology will overrun us one way or another. And we don't want to be those types of men. We don't want to be those types of dads. So what is technology then? Well, Andy Crouch, I'm going to refer to his book quite often here. So Andy Crouch has a book called The TechWise Family. We'll send you a link to that. If you could read one book on this topic, I would commend it to you. Honestly, it was probably the best book I've read in the last 12 months on anything. And it's a short read, which is probably why I thought it was the best. But it's a great read here. And so Andy says this, when he's talking about technology and he defines it, he says, look, technology works and it is everywhere. And then he makes the argument that technology is not a tool. See, technology is not a tool because a tool is something that you have to have skill to use, right? So if you were to walk into my house today, you would see several things that need to take place in my home for it to be of better repair, okay? And the reason that those things are not in better repair is because I have no earthly idea how to do it. Because despite the fact that I've watched YouTube videos on how to replace sheetrock or how to fix a toilet or whatever it might be, I still can't figure it out because I don't have the skill to use the hammer or the sander or the drill or whatever. Nobody taught me that. It's not something I'm familiar with. But these are tools that kind of live in a specific place for a certain purpose that you pull out at a certain time. I don't have a drill on me right now, but I do have my phone on me. And that technology is everywhere, and it kind of does it for me, right? And so I don't have to teach my 8-year-old how to use this thing. I just hand it to her, and she figures it out, right? And so technology is not a tool in that sense. Now, those terms can be interchangeable. I understand that there is a tool component to it, right? But technology is this thing that just kind of makes easy everywhere. Makes easy everywhere. And so there are benefits to that. And then there are downsides to that. So if family is intended to deliver wisdom, character, and creativity, what does technology deliver? And we're going to walk through this these three things together this morning. So what technology delivers is information, but it does not deliver wisdom. That's the family's job. Technology delivers caricature, but it does not deliver character. That's the family's job. And then technology delivers productivity, but the family is the one that must foster creativity. And so we're going to walk through each one of those. Let's start off with information versus wisdom. So we are living in an interesting day and age. We are inundated with information daily. So daily, okay, there are 500 million tweets that go out, 4 million hours of content uploaded to YouTube, uploaded, okay? That means that someone shot a video and thought, this is good enough to put on the internet, and then they did, okay? 4 million hours. 4.3 billion Facebook posts will go out today. 6 billion Google searches will happen today. 205 billion emails will be sent. There are tons and tons of information that are flooding our way. And here's the deal, guys. We are actually the first generation of parents whose kids don't need us to get information. We're the first generation of parents whose kids don't need us to get information. Now, just out of curiosity, how many of you have an Alexa in your house? Just curious, okay? All right, the FBI is listening, guys, just so you know. I'm just kidding. Obviously, a lot of us have Siri, right? And so my kids know that, hey, if I want to get an answer, I just, you know, hey, Dad, can I borrow your phone? Hey, Siri. And they ask your question. They don't come to me and ask for that. They don't have to anymore. Okay, what's the square root of 81? I don't know. Ask Siri. And Siri will tell you within a matter of seconds because information is at their fingertips. And so information is a good thing, right? We want to be informed. We want to have the facts and all this, but wisdom is what we must be giving to our children. And so another great book that I would recommend to you is a book called A Practical Guide to Culture by John Stonestreet. And Stonestreet says this often. If you listen to the Breakpoint podcast, you'll hear him say it often. He says, look, ideas have consequences and bad ideas have victims. You see, this information that is coming at our kids, it is communicating ideas to them. Or they are creating their own ideas out of their own creativity. Okay, well, if this is true, then that must mean this. And if we are not helping our kids to make sense of the world that is around them, then those ideas will have consequences. And if those ideas are bad ideas, they will have victims. And oftentimes, the victims are our own children. And really, when you look at the victims historically of bad ideas, it has always been women and children first. Not as the ones who should be rescued, but as the ones who are the victims. And so we have to help our kids to take the information that they have been given and to make sense of it in this world. That's what wisdom is. It is taking the information that is available to us and going, okay, how do I, as Deuteronomy 30 tells me, choose life in this scenario? How do I choose life? Colossians 2:8 says this, and I love the first three words of this, and I think they're such good words for us as men. See to it, men, that no one takes you, your family, captive by philosophy and empty deceit, according to human tradition, according to the elemental spirits of the world, and not according to Christ. See to it. Men, if we are leading our family to go, I want you to reflect God's wisdom in this world, then we must see to it that no one takes us, our wives, our children captive with philosophies and empty deceit. That is all around us. It's all around us. Proverbs 4, we see Solomon pleading with his son, saying, hey, son, give attention to what I am telling you. Hear what I say, for I give you good precepts. Do not forsake my teaching. When I was a son with my father, tender, the only one in the sight of my mother, he taught me and said to me, let your heart hold fast my words. Keep my commandments and live. Get wisdom, get insight. Do not forget and do not turn away from the words of my mouth. Do not forsake her and she will keep you. Love her and she will guard you. Men, this is our responsibility. This is what a faithful daddy does, what Solomon did for his son. Just going, son, listen up. Let me lead you in the way that is right and good and true. You see, our kids are getting this information, and kids, teens, they are brilliant observers. They are lousy interpreters. They're lousy interpreters. And so that's the job for us as dad, is to help our kids and interpret the world around them. Help them to make sense of this. See, there's this biblical worldview that we live in, and the world is going to tell us that that biblical worldview could go out the window. Last week at Dad U, I taught in Dallas, I taught on gender. Because right now the world is telling you, hey, this is what you get to do. And again, that information is readily available to our kids through television, through media, even at their school. My daughter is in junior high right now, and she comes home almost every day and tells me about what they heard about on CNN 10, which is something that they watch every morning at their school, right? And so we get to talk about these things and go, okay, let me help you make sense of. I'm not afraid of CNN 10, okay? I'm really not. I'm actually grateful that she gets to hear these things. What I am afraid of is that she won't come and talk to me. And that we won't have a chance to go, okay, how do I make sense of what you just heard there about that Supreme Court decision? Or about the latest trend that is out there? Or about that thing that happened in the hurricane? Some of the things that my daughter's asked me about just recently. And so how do we do this? Well, for us to be men and dads who lead our families well, we want to, first of all, create a safe environment for asking questions. Do your kids know, hey, you can ask me anything. We can talk about anything. This is something that from the earliest age, we want to instill in our children. Hey, this is good. You can come, you can talk to me about anything. You have a question about anything? I know as a dad, I've had these conversations with my kids where they're going, Daddy, I don't want to say that word, right? Because they heard it from a classmate or they heard about it on the radio or whatever it might have been. Oh, I don't want to say that word. We can talk about that. That's what your dad is here for. I promise you that whatever word you're going to say, I've probably heard it. Maybe I've used it and I shouldn't have, right? But I've heard it, and so let's talk about it. And so we want to create a safe environment for them to ask questions, and then we want to be good question askers. And so we want to ask questions. Stone Street, in his book, talks about three questions that anytime a child comes to you with, hey, I heard this, or my friends were telling me this, or this is true, that we ask three questions. First of all, what do you mean by that? Which, especially when you have little kids, is a really helpful first question, because they may say something and you're like, your brain goes to what a 30-year-old thinks of when they hear that word, and they're thinking about something they saw in Daniel Tiger's Neighborhood, and you want to make sure you talk about that and not this over here, okay? So what do you mean by that? How do you know that that's true? And then what if you're wrong? See, these are great conversations you can have around your dinner table. Man, I would tell you that in this battle, one of the greatest weapons that you have at your disposal is your dinner table. It's one of the greatest weapons you have. To sit at your dinner table, put the devices away, and to listen and talk to each other. And to talk about the events of the day, what's going on in their school and their friendships, but also about, man, what's going on in the world around them. They are hearing it, they're seeing it, and they need you. God has appointed you for this task. One of the tools that we use in our family, World Magazine, if you're not familiar with World Magazine, I would encourage you. World Magazine is a bi-monthly publication. You can get it every other week. And then they have three other publications. They have God's Big World, which is a preschool publication. They have World Kids, and then they have World Teens. And those are quarterly publications. And they come in the mail, and then my kids can't wait to get their hands on that. And they open it up, and they read it. And then we just get to talk about the things that are going on. My older kids are now reading World Magazine. And it's just it's from a biblical worldview, an understanding of what's going on in the world around them. And it just sparks conversations for us to talk about, okay, how do I make sense of this thing? And sometimes they're just fun, you know, little things about, you know, the latest research that's been done on such and such animal in this zoo or whatever. And that's awesome and that's fun. We just get to see God's creativity in the world. But these are some of the tools that you can use to help your kids make sense of, so that when that information comes across on your device or their device or a TV show that they're watching, that they have the tools necessary to make sense of the world. The second thing here is the idea of character. And what technology delivers is the ability for us to create a caricature. John Wooden is famous for saying, be more concerned with your character than your reputation, because your character is what you really are, while your reputation is merely what others think you are. The true test of a man's character is what he does when no one is watching. And technology, really, all it is affording us the ability to do is to create a reputation. Right? We get to post what we want to post. We get to let people see what we want them to see. And yet the heart is what we need to be drilling down on. Jean Twenge has an article that she wrote in The Atlantic called How Smartphones Destroyed a Generation talk about fear. I love Jean. I'm sure she's great. But she just says, it's a really helpful article. I think we'll send you a link to that as well. But she says this, look, teens who spend more time than average on screen activities are more likely to be unhappy, and those who spend more time than average on non-screen activities are more likely to be happy. There's not a single exception, she says. All screen activities are linked to less happiness. All non-screen activities are linked to more happiness. Why is that? Why is that? Well, Sherry Turtle, in her TED Talk, says this. She says, look, we're designing technologies that give us the illusion of companionship without the demands of friendship. The illusions of companionship. Sherry Turtle actually in the 80s wrote this book. She's an MIT professor. She wrote this book just talking about she saw this glorious golden age of technology and how awesome it was going to be in 20 or 30 years. She has since come back, and what Sherry Turtle didn't do is she didn't factor in that we live in a sinful, broken world full of broken people. And now she's coming back and saying, I'm scared. And Sherry Turtle doesn't have a faith. She doesn't know that there's a God who can be trusted in the midst of the craziness of our world, but her research is really compelling, and it helps us to see exactly what we have done, especially in the realm of social media. And so I want to talk about that for a second, because social media is the easy everywhere of reputation building. It used to be that you had to go to school as a kid to build your reputation. Now you are constantly under a barrage of, I wonder what people are thinking about me. And especially when we hand teenagers social media platforms and say, hey, just go, you know, use it. What's happening is that they're getting sucked into this world. They're designing it like slot machines. And the same thing that keeps people coming back to slot machines and pulling that lever is the same thing that keeps you swiping down to see, hey, has anybody liked my status again? Because we're continuing to go back. And every time that like hits that Instagram post or that Facebook post or whatever, there's a little dopamine rush that hits our minds and our bodies that is addictive, and it keeps us coming back. And I say us because you and I are victims of it today if we are not careful. And our kids are that much more susceptible to it. And so what is happening is instead of dealing with actual friendship that is hard, that is difficult, with actual relationships, even within the family, that are hard and difficult, what we are prone to do is to go to the easy everywhere and what I call the medicine pump of social media. So when I'm in an uncomfortable social situation, I can pull out my phone and go, well, nobody's paying attention to me. I wonder, okay, swipe down. Oh, good, someone liked that status. That makes me feel better about myself. Isn't that gross? But it's true. It's true for a lot of us. And our kids are doing the same thing. And so instead of pressing into the tough, instead of pressing into the awkward, instead of pressing into the hard conversations at our dinner tables and the suffering, quite honestly, that happens within that, we are instead going to this caricature of who we hope people see us as. Romans 5 tells us that we want to rejoice in our suffering because suffering produces endurance, and endurance produces what? Character. Character produces hope, and hope does not put us to shame because God's love has been poured into our hearts through the Holy Spirit who has been given to us. And we want our kids to produce the character that comes through suffering. And how do we suffer with each other? Well, look, the one another's are not easy, are they? They're not. They're really challenging. But they create these amazing opportunities. And so how do we help our kids in this area? And so I'll give you a few points. But we want to diligently strive to create an environment and relationship of secure love. This kind of goes back to the first point. We want to model and demand Sabbath rest, just putting our devices away. Andy Crouch talks about the rhythm for his family is 1 hour a day, 1 day a week, and 1 week a year that the device is just gone. And they're device-free in their family. And so every Saturday or every Sunday, they put all their devices away and just say, hey, we don't touch that for the day because we want to let our minds and our hearts rest from that. Not because it's evil and awful and we should never use it, but because we need rest from it, okay? We want to really be careful about introducing social media. So I mentioned my 15-year-old, he still does not have a social media platform because I don't think it's good for his heart right now. And some of his friends do, and that's fine, I get it. But I don't think that that's good for his heart right now. By the way, my oldest, when he was 13, got a flip phone. My daughter is 13 and a half, and she still does not have a flip phone. Why? Because she's a different child. And so you want to understand your kids and understand what are the things that going to be beneficial to them and help them as they mature in their character. But not just treat every kid is the same. One of the things I do with Josiah right now, and kind of preparing him for a social media account someday, is I read texts with him. I go, hey, buddy, let's just read your text together. And he's got, you know, group chats that are going on with his buddies. And so we just look through it. And occasionally I'll go, hey, man, you did really well here. That was an opportunity for you to encourage your friend, and you did it so well. And then there are other times I go, hey, man, you know, when you said this, I'm not sure you understood. Do you realize what that might have communicated to that person? I know you were just being funny or sarcastic and all that, but have you thought about it? Have you even maybe talked to that friend face-to-face and just said, hey, I sent this in a text. Were you okay? I took him to breakfast a few weeks ago, and I just had this conversation, and I think I've got to do it more regularly. I just said, hey, tell me how things are going with your phone. It's a weird conversation, right? Nobody had that conversation 10 years ago or 20 years ago, right? But I did. I just said, hey, how are things going with your phone? Talk to me about it. And, man, it opened up a great. He goes, man, Dad, will you take YouTube off my phone? He wouldn't look anything bad. He's just like, I keep spending time there. I keep wasting time. And he self-selected that because he just knew. He's like, man, it's not good for my heart right now. I was so proud of him. I was like, yes, I will take YouTube off your phone. How did it get on there in the first place? And so, I mean, it's just those types of things that we want to be diligent as dads to go, I'm helping to form your character. I'm helping to form your character. And this phone is a great means. It is a great environment for us to foster that, right? But if we're just apathetic about it, then we'll just kind of go with the flow. And the next thing you know, I'll say this, there is never a reason for your child's phone to sleep with them in their room at night. And so I would just encourage you, if you've got kids with phones, man, find that place in your house where they can, my phone doesn't sleep in my room with me. There's studies that are out there showing how it's actually having an impact on sleep patterns because people wake up and they go, oh, and they think about it and they grab it. It's like a chain smoker in the middle of the night. It's really what it is. If you think about that dopamine rush, right? They're waking up, they have that craving, and there's their phone, and they grab it. And of course, in the middle of the night is a terrible time. Your judgment is down. Your wisdom is down. And so in the same way that I wouldn't hand Josiah a Playboy magazine and say, hey, stick this under your pillow and please just don't look at it, I don't hand him a phone and say, hey, you know, buddy, just you'll be okay. I want to help him. I want to set boundaries for him that I hope are lifelong boundaries. And not giving him things, putting things in place for him that I am not doing myself. So one of the other points in there is just have total access for total transparency. Just means that I tell Josiah, I go, look, your phone belongs to me. I'm paying for it. And so that means I get it anytime I want. And as soon as I say, hey, can I have your phone? You give it to me. And again, I'm not trying to catch him in anything, but I pray often, I hope my kids get caught. When they choose death instead of life, I hope that they get caught so that I can lead them back to life. And so he just knows that there's no point in time. I have his password. I know how to get into his phone. I have now Disney Circle, which I would commend to you. If you aren't familiar with that, you can look it up. We don't have time to go into that, but it's just a way that I can track his usage and even limit time that he spends on different things. So, you know, he loves to play Fortnite. He gets 30 minutes a day of Fortnite, max. And that's it. That's all he needs. And even that, I'm not quite sure he needs, right? But I want to bless him. I want to encourage him. Okay, that's great. You can use that in that way. But I want to help him to develop character. Last point here is creativity. See, our phones and technology make us productive, but they don't necessarily make us creative. G.K. Chesterton says, we are perishing for want of wonder, not for want of wonders. See, we've forgotten how to just marvel at the world around us. We've forgotten how to marvel at it because we're too busy watching cat videos, apparently, okay? Maybe it's not cat videos for you, right? And yet there are wonders that are out there that God is going, man, look at all of this. Look at the beauty of not just my creation, but of other people, of who they are, and then, man, how can you bring more beauty into this world? So that's what we were created to be. Cell phone usage and its effects on our minds, there's mounting evidence that there is no such thing as multitasking. And yeah, that's what our phones have been set up to do, is go, hey, help you multitask. Here, you can get all these things done. Here we go. And yet all that's really happening is it's distracting us. And so they did studies of students who in class, just the very presence of a cell phone sitting on their desk is distracting. And it keeps them from concentrating on the things that matter the most. And so we want to help our kids to go, look, I understand that being productive is a good thing. It's a good thing, but it is not what you were ultimately created for. And what we have weeded out by being so productive is we've weeded out this beautiful thing called margin. You see, margin for our brains and for our minds, we were actually created for that. Do you remember? 6 days, and then God did what? He rested. And then he looked at Adam and Eve and said, hey, this is, if it's good enough for God, it must be good enough for you. 6 days, and then you rest. You create margin. You create margin. And within that margin, things happen in our hearts and our minds, and we start thinking about things. And we start letting our minds go in places. So some of my best ideas happen when I just have margin, when I have downtime, when I have rest. Andy Crouch, back in his book, he talks about the fact that the word boredom didn't even exist until about 200 years ago. There was no such word in the English language because they didn't know they were supposed to be bored, despite the fact they didn't have TV and they didn't have cell phones and they didn't have any of these things. They didn't know they were supposed to be bored. But now we've handed kids all these distractions, and guess what? Now they're like, oh, Daddy, I'm bored. I'm bored. I don't have anything to do. I'm like, that's perfect. That's what I tell my kids. I hate that. But it's like, that's great. I'm so glad you don't have anything to do. Go find something to do. Well, I don't have anything to do. Go find something to do. Well, tell me what I should do. No, just go find something to do. And it's amazing what kids will come up with when you don't give them something to do. A few years ago, I was in Ethiopia. I've been there many times, and I took my oldest with me. He's about 10 or 11 at the time. And the very last day we were there, we went to this church after we kind of been done out in the field where we were serving. And we came back to this church, and it was a school, a compassion school. So there were a bunch of compassion kids running around and all that, a bunch of boys. And there was this little tile floor in the church courtyard. And so I watched these boys grab a bench and set it on this end of the tile floor, and another bench and set it on this end of the tile floor. And then this is perfect. I didn't plan this, but they took this right here and they set it down. And for about an hour and a half, they played soccer with that thing. And I watched my son play and run around with these boys, and he had the time of his life. And I grabbed him and I said, son, when you ask me for an Xbox at Christmas, I'm going to remind you about that bottle cap. What happened? Well, they had space, they had margin, and then guess what it was? I told him, I said, hey, what was amazing about that time had nothing to do with that bottle cap. You know what it had to do with? It's about you being creative and you interacting with other creators, other sub-creators, these other boys. That's what made it a blast. And we've got to give our kids margin in this. Ephesians 2:10 says this, we are his workmanship created in Christ Jesus for good works, which God prepared beforehand that we should walk in them. You and I and our children have been given creative works to do in this world, to bring forth the gospel in this world. What an amazing opportunity. And how crazy to get sucked into a glowing rectangle that keeps us from those things. I appreciate Apple now, the whole screen time thing. So this is developed since May, right? So if you don't have the new iOS operating system, now you have screen time. We were sitting with our community group at dinner last night, and a friend was showing us, hey, look, this is my, these are the limits that I've put on. You know, I have this many minutes on Instagram, and now I can't get on Instagram for the rest of the day because I just set self-imposed limits. Dads, we have to model this for our kids. We have to model it for them. And if they see us every time we're sitting down or every time there's a stoplight or whatever it might be for you going, oh, I wonder what's happening, rather than engaging with the world around them, we've missed an opportunity. And we want to model this for them. And so a few points here and then we'll wrap up. So one is just model boundary setting in front of your kids. Find a place for your devices to go. Set them aside. Engage with each other. You want to create environments that foster and reward creativity. Okay, so for those of you with little kids, man, is there a place in your house where your kids know, hey, man, there's construction paper there, there's scissors, there's markers, there's glue, and we can clean it off the walls if we need to. But this is where my kids can go to just create, be creative, right? As opposed to a television or a gaming system that just kind of locks them in, and now they're just consumers. They're not creators, they're just consumers. We want to help our kids to be creative. And so create those environments. Music and art and all those things are great opportunities. Even just getting out and playing and running around outside and creating a new game. And those are things that can be a blessing to your kids. You want to strive for rest and not for leisure. okay? So leisure is just the consumption of something, okay? So the easiest for a group of men way to describe this is there is rest for us when we grab a football and we go out in the backyard and we throw it with our boys and with our girls, for that matter. That's rest. Leisure is when we sit on a couch, maybe next to our child, and just watch other people throw a football on a Sunday afternoon, okay? That's leisure. And so again, it's not that that you shouldn't ever do that or that there's not a place for that. I will be watching my Astros tonight and you can't stop me, okay? And so there is a place and a time for that. But if that is your version of rest, that's not true rest. Rest is us getting to, man, cook a meal together as a family in a way that we just don't get to do in the regular rhythms of our life. And so we have an extended period of time on a Sabbath day and we just go, okay, man, let's spend some time doing something that we wouldn't otherwise do. And then we want to lead our family to awe at the created over the produced and just see what God has done. So this is our task, is that we are making disciples in this digital age. Proverbs 24, 11 through 12, as we close, says, rescue those who are being taken away to death. Hold back those who are stumbling to the slaughter. If you say, behold, we didn't know this. Does not he who weighs the heart perceive it? Does not he who keeps watch over your soul know it? And will he not repay man according to his work? Men, we cannot say, I didn't know. I didn't know this was going to be such a big deal. You know, and you're responsible with what you know. And we have to lead our families towards wisdom, towards character, and creativity. And if we keep this main thing the main thing, then technology will come and go. It will take on various forms. It will develop. It will morph into all kinds of different things. And yet, if we are locked in and go, this is what God has called me to do as a man, to raise up these image bearers of God so that they can represent back to the world God's wisdom, his character, and his creativity in this world. And then no matter what else comes, our kids will be headed towards life.